miss a minute. Listen at your leisure, always online and on demand at RadioMD.com. You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
And this is Dr. Mike. You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show. Fantastic show so far, but it's coming up even better because we've got Dr. Gary Ginsberg from the Connecticut Department of Public Health, whose great website, whatstoxic.com. He has a segment with us, What's Toxic, What's Not. Gary, what about schools and what about mold? I heard a story this week about mold in schools. What do parents have to worry about now? More than food.
Yeah, right. Well, you don't want to eat moldy bread, that's for sure. But you also don't want to send your kid to a moldy school. And in the summertime, sometimes some parts of the school, some classrooms aren't getting a lot of use. They may be shut down. The air may not be properly dehumidified and conditioned. And so schools have had to learn the hard way that they have to have the at least some minimal air conditioning and dehumidification going. And if they don't, the kids may be going back to moldy floors, moldy desks, moldy walls. We've actually seen this in Connecticut from all the humidity we can get here in the Northeast. So what my message to parents and to school administrators and teachers, make sure that your school building, especially this time of the year in August, if you want to have that evergreen school, you want the school to be mold-free. You don't want the kids going back and becoming allergic to their classroom. And that means having some dehumidification going, some ventilation going in those rooms. Mold loves stagnant air. Mold loves damp air. Mold loves carpeting and wallboard. So schools can be a target this time of the year.
So if your kid, and the symptom you see is your kid is allergic, your kid comes home with runny nose or runny eyes, red eyes.
Yeah. They feel worse at school and better at home. But, of course, a lot of kids hate school, so they're going to feel worse at school. But also, if the child is complaining of health symptoms that are consistent with mold, take a walk into their classroom and sniff around and look around. Mold is usually fairly obvious. It's fuzzy. It stains the walls. You may smell a musty odor. The teachers will usually be onto it as well. They don't want to be in a moldy classroom.
Now, what's this drug called Zilmax doing in most beef? I heard that Zilmax is in, 90% of our beef?
Yeah, in this country, Mike, they've banned it in Europe and Japan. But our beef producers, at least the big ones, the big commercial ones, are using supplements like Zilmax. It's not a hormone. I mean, we normally think of, the steroids that beef up, the androgenic steroids, like what A-Rod is accused of beefing up the cattle so that they are bigger and heavier when they go to slaughter. But in this case, it's a beta agonist. So it's something that some people are taking as a heart medicine or as an anti-asthma medicine. In people, it could be used in animals to beef them up. And, Mike, you're the doctor here. Explain to us agonist would beef up a cow.
Yeah, well, it increases the blood glucose level, so that glucose goes into fat, so you get more marbling and a bigger animal. Yeah. But that doesn't make any sense, so they actually put a drug. Now, this actually has a short-term... Meaning, when it's exposed to air, it no longer is very effective, but it stays in the muscle and in the fat. It probably still has some effect on us humans.
Yeah, there's probably some dose that's coming through the animal into the beef. That's not the reason why Tyson Foods, in particular, has announced that they're stopping it. It's bad for the animal. So the animals get this at the end, let's say 2 months before slaughter, to beef them up and put on an extra 30 or 40 pounds. And by the time they get to slaughter on this drug for 2 months, they may be falling down. They may be having all sorts of side effects from it. So Tyson has stopped it. But the other major beef makers are still using it. So, just a heads up about Sometimes it really is good to think about where you're sourcing your meat from. The smaller farm-to-table type of producers are probably not using this. Organic meats probably would not be using this kind of drug, which there's real humane issues about this.
Now, we also have a problem with Colorado, since we are carried by two wonderful stations, newly carried by two wonderful
right.
stations in Colorado, that Colorado had a case of West Nile virus causing a death. What's this all about?
Yeah, a blood transfusion. And, you know, this really surprised me. I didn't know that West Nile virus could be transmitted through, tainted blood. But a guy who donated blood nine times, get you, nine different times in the last couple of years, but one of his blood samples was near a time when he was infected with West Nile virus. And that West Nile virus was screened for by the Cross, and they did not detect it. If it was there, it was at a low enough level. Yet going from the donor to the new host, that blood, that West Nile virus, grew out into a full-blown fulminant infection. Probably the person that was getting it, I believe, had cancer and was immunocompromised, and that finished him off. And so none of the other nine blood donations by this particular donor caused West Nile virus. But I guess the message to the general public on this, and this is West Nile virus time of the year, by the way, at least where I live in Connecticut, because the mosquito populations are at their peak in August. And so if you think that you've recently had West Nile virus, you probably don't want to give blood.
And now, West Nile virus for most people is just a flu-like illness.
Yes.
It's not the one that kills you or that debilitates your brain. That occurs rarely.
Yeah, that's equine encephalitis, Mike.
But, well, there are two. The more common West Nile, in fact, just causes a flu-like illness. Is that correct?
Right, except if you're immunocompromised. So the very old or the very young could succumb to it because they may have trouble fighting it. If you don't have an immunity to it and you're older, you may not build up an immunity fast enough to fend off the virus. And, there have been a number of deaths in a number of states just from something that's a relatively simple virus for most of us to fend off.
Now, another top, if you will, item is that triclosan has been associated with kids' problems. What problem does triclosan give?
Yeah, well, this is one of those emerging contaminants, and I think it's emerging partially from marketing of antibacterial. Some of the big companies are capitalizing on our fear of bacteria factor. Everybody wants to be all sterile and not be exposed to any germs, the germaphobe factor. And so triclosan has gotten itself, this is a chemical, it's got a lot of chlorine molecules on it, which are fairly, make a molecule very reactive. So it's good at killing bacteria, but it's also good at reacting with parts of our body that we don't really need to have hit on by extra chlorine. And triclosan has been found to be anti-thyroid. It's also found to be promoting asthma and respiratory problems in children. Some new epidemiology, some basic research in animals has been showing this now. And so my general message is, the less exposure of children to triclosan, the better. And one obvious place that parents can try to safeguard their children from this antibacterial chemical is in toothpaste. So it's not in kids' toothpaste. They don't put it into kids' toothpaste, but it is in some adult version.
So read the label on toothpaste. If it's got triclosan on it, probably you as well as your kid want to avoid it. Do floss. Do see a dental professional every 6 months. Gary Ginsberg, whatstoxic.com, great segment. We'll be right back with Dr. Perry. He's going to talk about tattoos and the new facials on You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.